Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Today is December the 26th, 2010. It's the day after Christmas, when almost all of America is bundled inside their homes, surrounded by their children, their presents, etc., surrounded by all of their debts, surrounded by their mortgages, living in the house that is not yet foreclosed upon, but may very well become foreclosed upon. And meanwhile, we see in the New York Times an article about the Drug Enforcement Administration and how it's been transformed into a global intelligence organization with a reach that extends far beyond narcotics and an eavesdropping operation so vast that it has to fend off foreign politicians who want to use the DEA against their political enemies, according to secret diplomatic cables from WikiLeaks. In far greater detail than previously seen, these new cables from the cache obtained by WikiLeaks and made available to some news organizations offer glimpses of drug agents balancing diplomacy and law enforcement in places where it can be very hard to tell the politicians from the traffickers, and where drug rings are themselves many states whose wealth and violence permit them to run roughshod over struggling governments. I think that those of you who have listened to my radio show for years have understood that drug enforcement worldwide is one of the many mafia industries of large federal governments such as our own, that our CIA is being paid mostly with drug sales. Well, this is nothing new. Well, they've also been paid for with robberies of banks, etc. And, of course, the mafia that does the drug trafficking, in many cases, their relatives own all of the banks in New York so that they're able to hide their identities. So this is nothing new for us, but for other people it may very well be. But they're probably watching football and not paying any attention anyway, which is why America's going to hell in a handbasket. Diplomats have recorded unforgettable visionettes from the largely unseen war on drugs as seen in WikiLeaks. In Panama, for instance, an urgent BlackBerry message from the president of that country to the American ambassador demanded that the DEA go after his political enemies. "I need help with tapping phones," he wrote. In Sierra Leone, a major cocaine trafficking prosecution was almost upended by the Attorney General's attempt to solicit $2.5 million in bribes. In Guinea, the country's biggest narcotics kingpin turned out to be the president's son, and diplomats discovered that before the police destroyed large narcotic seizures, that the drugs had been replaced by flour. Leaders of Mexico's beleaguered military issued private pleas for closer collaboration with the drug industry, confessing that they had little faith in their own country's police forces. Cables from Myanmar, the target of strict United States sanctions, described the drug agency's informants reporting both on how the military junta enriches itself with drug money and on the political activities of the junta's opponents. Officials of the DEA and the State Department declined to discuss what they said was information that should never have been made public. Well, isn't that too bad? You wouldn't want the truth to leak out, would you? You government, you're so pitiful in Washington, D.C. You characters are just pitiful. You're like a bunch of little children. You have these little guns and these air forces to play with and all this money. You don't want anybody to know what you're doing. That's too damn bad, Buster. Because everybody knows now. Like many of the cables made public in recent weeks by WikiLeaks and the New York Times and the Washington Post and others, including Frank Waltner, those describing the drug war do not offer large disclosures. Rather, it's the little details that add up to a clear picture of the corrupting influence of big drug traffickers. The tricky game of figuring out which foreign officials are actually controlled by drug lords. And the story of how an entrepreneurial agency operating in the shadows of the FBI has become something more than a drug agency. The DEA now has 87 offices in 63 countries. And close partnerships with governments that keep the Central Intelligence Agency at arm's length. I have to laugh. This whole DEA thing, this war on drugs, is nothing but a scam. The DEA is an octopus that's out there to make as much money as it can. It's like a franchise. They have 87 offices in 63 countries. And it says here they have close partnerships, meaning they've penetrated governments that keep the Central Intelligence Agency at arm's length. But the DEA, which deals with drugs, yeah, they're allowed in, aren't they? Because of the ubiquity of the drug scourge, today's DEA has access to foreign governments, including those like Nicaragua's and Venezuela's, that have strained diplomatic relations with the United States. Many are eager to take advantage of the agency's drug detection and wiretapping technologies. In some of these countries, the collaboration appears to work well, and with the drug agency providing intelligence that has helped bring down traffickers and even entire cartels. But the victories can come at a high price, according to the cables, which describe scores of DEA informants and a handful of agents who have been killed in Mexico and Afghanistan. In Venezuela, the local intelligence service turned the tables on the DEA, infiltrating its operation, sabotaging equipment, and hiring a computer hacker to intercept American embassy emails, the cables report. Well, I mean, you can't blame Venezuela for doing that. I mean, here you had the president of Venezuela being kidnapped in a revolution and being tossed in the basement of the palace and told, either you sign this or we're going to kill you, and he wouldn't sign it. 3 days later, the people appeared outside the palace demanding that President Chavez, the duly elected president of Venezuela, be allowed back, and he was allowed back, and the people who were responsible for the coup had to leave town. Now, the United States was involved in all of that, so you can expect that Venezuela would turn the tables and hack all the computers that the America had if they could get their fingers on it. Would you think you were making friends when you tried to overthrow the duly elected president of Venezuela because you're a capitalist pig and he was... Did you really think that? You people are out of your minds over there in Washington. In Venezuela, as I said, the intelligence service there turned the tables on the DEA. And as the drug agency has expanded its eavesdropping operations to keep up with cartels, it has faced repeated pressure to redirect its counter-narcotic surveillance to local concerns, provoking tensions with some of Washington's closest allies. For instance, cables written in February by American diplomats in Paraguay describe the DEA's pushing back against requests from that country's government to help spy on insurgent groups. known as the Paraguayan People's Army, or the EPP, the initials of its name in Spanish. This leftist group, suspected of having ties to the Colombian rebel group FARC, had conducted several high-profile kidnappings and was making a small fortune in ransoms. When American diplomats refused to give Paraguay access to the drug agency's wiretapping system, Interior Minister Rafael Villalzola threatened to shut it down, saying, "Counter-narcotics are important, but it won't topple our government." But the EPP could. The DEA faced down even more intense pressure last year from Panama, whose right-leaning president, Ricardo Martinelli, demanded that the agency allow him to use its wiretapping program known as Matador to spy on leftist political enemies he believed were plotting to kill him. The USA, according to the cables, worried that Mr. Martinelli, a supermarket magnate, made no distinction between legitimate security targets and political enemies, so they refused, igniting tensions that went on for months. Mr. Martinelli, who the cables said possessed a penchant for bullying and blackmail, retaliated by proposing a law that would have ended the DEA's work with specially vetted police units. Then he tried to subvert the drug agency's control over the program by assigning non-vetted officers to the counter-narcotics unit. Well, he got a little testy there, didn't he? Oh, well. And when the United States pushed back against those attempts moving the Matador system into the offices of the politically independent Attorney General, Mr. Martinelli threatened to expel the drug agency from the country altogether, saying other countries like Israel would be happy to comply with his intelligence requests. Well, you talk about playing one fascist agency off against another. This takes the cake. This is great stuff, man. This WikiLeaks is going to be a lot of fun. Eventually, according to the cables, American diplomats began wondering about Mr. Martinelli's motivations. Did he really want the DEA to disrupt plots by his adversaries? Or was he trying to keep the agency from learning about corruption among his relatives and friends? Are you going to be that way, Mr. Martinelli? We're going to accuse your relatives and your friends of being drug dealers now. Talk about a way to win friends and influence people. Good grief. One cable asserted that Mr. Martinelli's cousin helped smuggle tens of millions of dollars in drug proceeds through Panama's main airport every month. Another noted there is no reason to believe there will be fewer acts of corruption in this government than in any past government. You gotta love this. You just have to love it. I mean, whoever heard of corruption in governments, right? United States, Panama, Venice, whoever heard of such a thing? Why, I'm so shocked. As the standoff continued, the cables indicate that the United States proposed suspending the Matador program rather than submitting to Mr. Martinelli's demands. American officials say the program was suspended, but the British took over the wiretapping program and have shared the intelligence with the United States. You got to ask yourself, why would the United States be wiretapping in Panama? And what right do they have to wiretap anybody? None whatsoever, but that never stopped a fascist government from doing things like this. They're fascist. Come on. They don't care about anybody's rights to privacy. They're just fascists. There's nothing going on in Panama that could really interest the United States much except for drug trafficking, which they're interested in because the United States does so much of it. They don't want to be outwitted by these people. They want that money to go through our operatives, like our DEA, our CIA, not to some foreign country where someone else is going to horn in on their profits. In a statement on Saturday, the government of Panama said that it regretted the bad interpretation by United States authorities of requests for help made on to directly confront the crime and drug trafficking. It said that Panama would continue its efforts to stop organized crime and emphasized that Panama continued to have excellent relations with the United States. You see, even after all these bad cables came out, they had a stiff upper lip and said, "We love the United States, even though you tortured us as a colony for 100 frigging years. With the Panama Canal, we still, and you put our duly elected president Noriega in a basement and wouldn't let him talk to anybody, and he still can't talk to anybody because he's in a prison in France. We still love you, and we trust you, United States, because you're just a bunch of wonderful guys, and you've been so good to Panama. You know, you've destroyed our major city, Panama City, in bombings during your Panama War that you had against us. We just love you, USA." Yeah, right. Meanwhile, in Paraguay, according to the cables, the United States acquiesced, agreeing to allow the authorities there to use DEA wiretaps for anti-kidnapping investigations, as long as they were approved by Paraguay's Supreme Court. "We have carefully navigated this very sensitive and politically sticky situation," one cable says. "It appears that we have no other viable choice." Created in 1973, the DEA has steadily built its international turf, an expansion primarily driven by the multinational nature of the drug trade, but also by forces within the agency seeking a larger mandate. Since the 2001 terrorist attacks, the agency's leaders have cited what they describe as an expanding nexus between drugs and terrorism in further building its overseas presence. In Afghanistan, for example, DEA officials have become convinced that no daylight exists between drug traffickers at the highest level and Taliban insurgents. And that was from Karen Tandy, the agency's administrator at that time, as she told European Union officials in a 2007 briefing, according to a cable from Brussels. Well, I find that very interesting and not very clever, since the Taliban were well known for not allowing anyone to harvest and grow morphine. They wouldn't allow opium to be raised by their peasants, because it was against Islamic law. Which is one reason why the America and the DEA went in there, so that we would get these people start planting this junk again, so that the United States and its agencies could make money off of it, and at the least sell it to the mafia, who are connected with our banking Rothschild satanic denizens here in the United States, so the United States could continue to grow on this, you know, this drug business, which really keeps the banks in money, along with the petroleum. The petroleum keeps them in money too. These are the biggest scams in the world. Petroleum, you take a pipe and put it down in the ground and suck this black gold out. You know, you sell it and you immediately have money in your pocket. Same thing with drugs. Plant a few seeds of opium and you harvest it. You cut the big round globe of opium, and all that white stuff comes out, and you make a fortune off of it. Ms. Tandy with the American government described an agency informant's recording of a meeting in Nangarhar province between 9 Taliban members and 11 drug traffickers to coordinate their financial support for the insurgency. And she said that the agency was trying to put a security belt around Afghanistan to block the import of chemicals for heroin processing. Like the United States doesn't want heroin processing when there's such a fortune to be made by government agencies in that. The agency was embedding its officers in military units around Afghanistan, she said. In 2007 alone, the DEA opened new bureaus in Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, and Dubai, United Arab Emirates, as well as 3 Mexican cities. Yeah, if you believe this stuff, then you're really not keeping your head above water. The United States has been into drug trafficking, just like Great Britain and France and all the other great powers are always into drug trafficking. Why? Because they're in it for money. Money, power, the ability to use that money to spy on other countries, to build weapons programs. That's why these governments get into it, including the United States. Who are these folks kidding, and who are these people writing these stories kidding? Come on, folks, we're on to you. We know what's going on here. Give us a little respect, will you, please? Don't treat us like children. We know what you're trying to hide here. And it's not pretty. I got a real surge of pleasure running through me today when I found out that the entire East Coast was socked in with snow. Yeah, up to 15 to 20 inches of snow everywhere. Why, you know, the thugs in New York and Washington were hardly able to go out and spend their illicitly raised drug money and their money from the federal treasury. You know, that Federal Reserve, that honeypot of paper, fake phony money. They weren't able to go out and spend that stuff because they couldn't get their car out of the garage. And even the restaurants where they would sup and dine on Chateaubriand, well, they were closed too. So I liked it. I thought, this is great. You know, the Rothschild thugs, the satanic Judeo-Bolsheviks who are atheists and pretend that they're fake Jews, weren't able to do their illicit business, weren't able to run the banks, which it was a Sunday, so they wouldn't run them anyway, weren't able to pick up their phones and talk to their favorite congressman because they were busy at home trying to figure out what they're going to do the next day in Congress to screw over the American people. And they didn't really want to get a message from a bank at that time because they'd just gotten through Christmas and they're on airplane flights going back to Washington. But they couldn't get their flight to Washington because the poor dears, the airports were closed down because of the snow. So that meant they couldn't pass any more laws to screw the American people over with. And I found that to be a glorious thing. There's been so much snow, by the way, that Columbia and South Carolina, for instance, has its first Christmas snow since records were first kept in 1887. They'd never had a Christmas snow before. And Atlanta's had their first snow since 1882. I think here in St. Louis, this was our first Christmas snow in about 15 years or so. We don't get it very often either. Considering that we're much further north than these other places, we don't really get all that much snow, although there have been years where we were snowed in for the entire winter, but that's very unusual. Other things that have occurred in the news recently is that Britain considers passing new laws to fine airports for poor service. And why would they want to do that? Well, just recently, their airports have been snowed in, and people are all angry about it. A lot of folks who wanted to spend Christmas with their relatives spent their Christmas at the airport. I'm laughing because I've spent many a time at an airport where the planes couldn't take off, and I know these people were miserable. And all over Europe, people have spent as long as 8 days in the airport waiting to get out. And they can't because these huge snow squalls are all over the place. It's just a blizzard everywhere in Europe right now. The airport at the main airport at Moscow even was closed after an overnight snow. And, you know, Moscow is very used to snow. They don't close their airport for snow very often. But the snow was so bad that they had to close it down just to clean it up so people could take off and land again. And for most of the travelers in Europe, they spent their Christmas at the airport. I've seen news stories where hotels in Europe have given free room to the people from the airports because they were so miserable. They took some pity on them. They were broke. They couldn't afford any more money for a hotel room. So the hotels gave them free rooms. I think that's remarkable. I'm all for that. I think there's too much capitalism in our world, and that people should be kinder to each other. And I thought that was nice that they were kind. The New York Times opinion pages had a headline saying, "Bundle up, it's global warming." An opinion piece, the New York Times wrote that the earth continues to get warmer, yet it's feeling a lot colder outside. That's pretty funny. Over the past few weeks, sub-zero temperatures in Poland claimed 66 lives. Snow arrived in Seattle well before the winter solstice and fell heavily through Minneapolis, enough in Minneapolis to make the roof of the Metrodome collapse. And last week, blizzards closed Europe's busiest airports in London and Frankfurt for days, stranding holiday travelers. The snow and record cold have invaded the eastern United States, with more bad weather predicted. The New York Times opinion piece says all of this cold was met with perfect comic timing by the release of a World Meteorological Organization report showing that 2010 will probably be among the three warmest years on record, and 2001 through 2010 the warmest decade on record. They ask incredulously, how can we reconcile this? The not-so-obvious short answer is that the overall warming of the atmosphere is actually creating cold weather extremes. Last winter, too, was exceptionally snowy and cold across the eastern United States and Eurasia, as were seven of the previous nine winters. For a more detailed explanation, we must turn our attention to the snow in Siberia. And it goes on with the cycles of El Nino and Southern Oscillation, solar variability, global ocean currents, and how these phenomena are creating this colder and wetter, snowier winters that are making people pretty miserable. And it's consistent with global warming. Well, you know, it could be, because obviously, the temperature has to be just right for snow, and sometimes it's too cold for snow. Snow wants to occur right around 29 degrees. You get down to 27, it'll stop. You get up to 32, 33, it'll stop. There's a certain temperature that snow occurs at, and global warming could help that temperature to occur and stay there a little bit longer, thus creating horrific snowstorms. So there you have that. Meanwhile, Israel's foreign minister has said recently that peace is impossible. Yes, believe it or not, the Israeli foreign minister says peace is impossible. Oh, my goodness. He said Sunday a peace deal with the Palestinians is totally impossible under current conditions, and that Israel should pursue a lesser deal instead, a concept that the Palestinians swiftly rejected. The latest diplomatic spat between the two sides came as violence along the Israeli-Gaza border simmered. After days of accelerated Palestinian rocket attacks on southern Israel and Israeli airstrikes in response, Israeli soldiers killed two Palestinians on the border early Sunday. I'm sure our Israeli friends are in tears that they killed two Palestinians on the border. You know how they love those Palestinians. I'm sure they were in tears. Avigdor Lieberman, the Israeli foreign minister, told a conference of Israeli diplomats that instead of a full peace deal, Israel should seek a long-term interim agreement on security and economic matters. But Palestinians have consistently rejected that approach. It's not only that it's impossible to reach an overall agreement, Lieberman said, it's simply forbidden. Lieberman said that the West Bank Palestinian Authority, whom Israel has pledged to negotiate, is not legitimate because it has postponed elections. Why, you're illegitimate because you've postponed elections. How dare you? Not that the Israelis haven't done that all the time in the past. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas remains in office through his elected term expired almost a year ago, and there's no date for a new election. Well, if that's true, then how come Israel continues to negotiate with him? So all of a sudden, Lieberman is known for expressing hardline views that don't always represent Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who says that he seeks a negotiated final peace deal with the Palestinians, but he has declined to give specifics. Don't you love how the Israelis lie? They lie better than anybody else, and they don't care if you know they're lying. They'll sit there and lie anyway. They'll stand right up at the microphone and lie while they know that you know that they're lying. They're great at it. I mean, it's just amazing. Their deceit knows no bounds, and they have no shame. A statement from Netanyahu's office said Lieberman's comments reflect his personal positions, not those of the government. We have a little spat there with Lieberman and Netanyahu. Peace talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority broke down in September after an Israeli freeze on settlement construction expired. Well, if you want to really make a Palestinian angry, all you've got to do is tell them that Israel's going to put some more construction of homes for more Israelis in their territory, especially in Jerusalem. And I'll bet you you're going to get a cold look from them. The Palestinians say they will not negotiate as long as Israel builds homes for Jews in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, lands that the Palestinians claim for a future state. U.S. mediators have returned in indirect talks to seek a way out of the impasse. Oh, well. The Palestinian Authority spokesman, Ghassan Khatib, has rejected Lieberman's comments, saying that most world governments, including Israel's, recognize the Palestinian Authority as legitimate. He said the Palestinians would not accept an interim agreement. It's too late now for anything except ending the occupation and allowing for two states on the 67 borders, he said, referring to 1949 truce lines that marked the West Bank until the 1967 Mideast War when Israel captured the territory. Israeli cabinet member Benjamin Ben Eliezer warned Sunday that if peace talks fail, the whole world is likely to recognize a sovereign Palestinian state, a development Israel would not welcome. Within a year, we will find ourselves in a situation where the whole world, and I wouldn't be surprised if even the United States, would support a Palestinian state, he said. I don't think you have to worry about that happening. The United States isn't going to recognize a Palestinian state because the United States is a colony of Israel. Yes, let me repeat that. The United States is a colony of Israel because the Rothschild violent banks, those atheists with their fake Jewishness who run the banks in New York and London and elsewhere in the world, in the major capitals, and has a total control over the money supply of all those countries, and therefore has total control over those countries, isn't going to allow the United States or England or anyone else to recognize Palestine without pulling the rug out from their entire economy. And, of course, then you have George Soros up there, you know, with his little Christmas cart of money laundering, whereby he can bring down any nation he wants, and he's a total corrupted Rothschild Zionist as well. I mean, this isn't going to happen. You're not going to see a Palestinian state. You're going to see the Palestinians moved out of Israel, and they're going to take all that land for themselves, which has been their plan all along. The Israeli military said it launched an airstrike recently after spotting two men trying to plant explosives along the border. But wouldn't it be nice if we could launch airstrikes in St. Louis every time somebody decides to put a gun under their coat? The Islamic Jihad militant group said two of its members died in a clash with Israeli ground troops. There was no way to immediately reconcile the two accounts. In other words, it's an admission that the story here is lying. The Israeli military said it launched an airstrike after spotting two men trying to plant explosives. And the Islamic Jihad militant group said two of its members died in a clash with Israeli ground troops. And there's no way to immediately reconcile the two accounts. So one account says ground troops, the other one says an airstrike. But you can reconcile it, because guess what? There's two dead Palestinians, isn't there, buddy? Oh, yeah, we've heard the two dead Palestinians story over and over again. And as long as there were two dead Israelis, oh, my God, they would have killed thousands of Palestinians over it. But two dead Palestinians, well, heck, that's nothing, folks. Turn the page. Because the Palestinians aren't worth anything. The Israelis think they're insects. They're just nothing. The border between Palestine and Israel has been mostly calm since Israel's Gaza war 2 years ago, but clashes have flared in recent weeks, and on Saturday, Gaza's militant Hamas rulers warned they would escalate hostilities against Israel if tensions didn't subside. The Islamic militant Hamas, which rules Gaza, is at odds with the West Bank Palestinian Authority and rejects any negotiations with Israel. Also Sunday, an Israeli court said a Palestinian whom Israel is trying to ban from the city could remain while he appeals his case. Adnan Gith, who has led protests against Jewish settlers in his East Jerusalem neighborhood, was to remain outside of Jerusalem for 4 months starting Sunday evening. The military issued the ban, saying it considers him a threat to the public order. Boy, I bet you're not going to ban the Israelis up over there with their settlements in the West Bank, though, are you? No, buddy, you're not going to do that, you bunch of racists. Nothing more racist than Israel and its army. Rights groups worry that the ban, based on an obscure emergency regulation that predates Israel's establishment, could be used to target others. Well, what in the heck is new? Absolutely nothing. The racism of Israel against the inhabitants of that land that they're trying to steal from these people has been seen and has been evident for many, many decades. There is nothing more racist than the Israeli state, which is based on a single religion and a single group of people who profess to be fake members of that religion. But they couldn't be real members because, first of all, they're not related to Abraham. They aren't related to anybody that lived in the area unless they lived there before the Zionists showed up. And there were 25,000 of them living there, who may have been related to Abraham, but the ones that came from Europe were related to Genghis Khan, the Mongol, who invaded Turkey and southern Russia and left these people there called the Khazarians, who then converted to Judaism in order to avoid having a war between Russia and Islamic Turkey. They're fake Jews. There's nothing real about them. They're Mongolians, basically. You know, when they tell you that they've been there for centuries, don't believe it. They came from Mongolia. They want to go back home to the land God gave them. They need to go to Mongolia. They need to go to Kuala Lumpur and have all sorts of games on ponies where they where they take swats at lambskins in the dust, because they're not from Israel at all. Never were, never will be. It's all a big lie. It's a fake deal. But what they really are is they're satanic Rothschild Bolsheviks. They're related to the people that took over the Soviet Union and murdered 65 million Christians there, and murdered the Christian family of the Tsar, including his innocent little daughters, his innocent wife, and his innocent little son, Alexis, and murdered them with bayonets while they were screaming for mercy. And those are your Jewish folks who run the banks in New York, who won't cooperate with you, who won't tell you where the money went, especially their little milkmaid there, Mr. Bernanke. You know, that little Jewish Bolshevik in the federal government that's running the Federal Reserve. He won't tell you, a Christian, where the money went. Although recently it was published where it went. It went to a bunch of Jewish Rothschild banks all over Europe, all over places like Ireland, etc. Didn't come here. It went to the people that the Jewish banks here in America screwed over with their derivatives. And they want you to pay for it. But really, promise me that you won't pay for it. Don't you dare pay for it. These people made these deals. They knew that they were being dishonest when they did it, and these people deserve to go to jail. And I'll be very happy to report it when they do have to go to jail. Very, very happy to report that to you. And I think that it may happen. It's going to be difficult for the government to do that, but they did put Madoff in jail, so I wouldn't count it out altogether. As things get more and more chaotic, as more and more of the economy shuts down due to what these Judeo-Bolshevik banks did in New York and in Washington and in Philadelphia, there'll be more and more people calling for the arrest of these people. And more people asking for the Judeo-Bolsheviks to be deported from the United States, to have their properties wrenched from their hands, with which they have enslaved us, especially the media, that they've used to blind us from everything that they do, including how they ran the Soviet Union and murdered over 65 million Christians there. Here's an interesting story for you to show you how friendly Mexico is to the United States. The same Mexico that's allowing millions of people to walk across the border into the United States without stopping them. Joseph Proctor told his girlfriend he was popping out to the convenience store in the quiet Mexican beach town where the couple had just moved, intending to start a new life. But the next morning, the 32-year-old New York native was dead inside his crashed van on a road outside Acapulco. He had multiple bullet wounds. An AR-15 rifle lay in his hands. His distraught girlfriend, Liliana Gil Vargas, was summoned to police headquarters, where she was told that Proctor had died in a gun battle with an army patrol. They claimed Proctor, whose green van had a for sale sign and his cell phone number spray painted on the windows, had attacked the troops. Well, now here's a story for you that shows just exactly how bad things are. Joseph Proctor, who was an American, told his girlfriend, who he was going to the convenience store in the quiet Mexican beach town where they had just moved, intending to start a new life. But the next morning, the 32-year-old New York native was dead inside his crashed van on a road outside Acapulco. He had multiple bullet wounds, and an AR-15 rifle lay in his hands. His distraught girlfriend, Liliana Gil Vargas, was summoned to police headquarters, where she was told that Proctor died in a gun battle with an army patrol. The Army claimed that Proctor, whose green van had a for sale sign and his cell phone number spray painted on the windows, had attacked the troops. They showed her the gun. His mother, Donna Proctor, devastated and incredulous, has been fighting through Mexico's secretive military justice system ever since to learn what really happened. It took weeks of pressuring U.S. diplomats and congressmen for help, but she finally got the answer, which she shared with the Associated Press. Three soldiers have been charged with killing her son. Two have been charged with planting the assault rifle in his hands and claiming falsely that he fired first, according to a Mexican Defense Department document sent to her through the U.S. Embassy in Mexico City. This isn't the only case like this. It's the third this year in which soldiers locked in a brutal battle with drug cartels have been accused of killing innocent civilians and faking evidence and cover-ups. And what this has to do with brutal battles with drug cartels, I don't know. Now, this man was killed in his van. He had no weapon. They put a weapon in his hands. Why would the news story even say that the soldiers are locked in a brutal battle with drug cartels when these three civilians that were killed had no guns whatsoever? That doesn't make any sense. It's part of the Judeo-Bolshevik media trying to muddy things for the reader. They think that we are so stupid that we won't notice things like that, and so they give neurotic indicators of what really is the situation, which is that it's out of control, that these people were murdered, and the fact is, you can't blame it on brutal cartel battles, because the people that were murdered weren't brutal. They were just innocent civilians with no weapons. And they lied about it. The soldiers lied about it. So, why would they even bring this up about the drug cartel battles? You people don't know who you're dealing with, do you? Do you think that everybody who reads a newspaper is that stupid? Are you such sorry putzes with no one to question you that you think you can write anything you want and that people will go along with it? Because you're so special? Please, I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. By the way, Kissinger is in trouble now because he made some comment about the Holocaust. That, you know, maybe we need another Holocaust, that killing a bunch of Jews would be worth it. And people who think that their parents were killed in the Holocaust, or at least claim that their parents were killed in the Holocaust, well, they're pretty mad about it. Well, I guess you would be. I can see that. I can see that. But you see, Kissinger's Jewish, and he doesn't care about the Holocaust. You know what I mean? I mean, he didn't care about it, according to his statement. He said it was okay to kill a bunch of Jews. He says, I don't care. Now, I'm laughing because I know that this is not the response from Kissinger that you want. You'd like to have all the Jews, especially important ones like Kissinger, show some respect, wouldn't you? Well, it didn't happen this time, did it? Now, if you don't think you're being propagandized enough, the way things are, then here's a new way of propagandizing you. A recently granted patent reveals that Apple, the company behind the iPod and iPhone, has been working on a new type of display screen that produces three-dimensional and even holographic images without the need for glasses. The technology could be used to produce a new generation of televisions, computer monitors, and cinema screens that would provide viewers with a more realistic experience. The system relies upon a special screen that is dotted with tiny pixel-sized domes that deflect images taken from slightly different angles to the right and left eye of the viewer. By presenting images from slightly different angles to the right and left eye, this creates a stereoscopic image that the brain interprets as three-dimensional. Apple also proposes using 3D imaging technology to track the movements of multiple viewers and the positions of their eyes so that the direction of the image is deflected by the screen and can be subtly adjusted to ensure the picture remains sharp and in 3D. Now you probably ask, well, why would this help to propagandize us and to keep us calm and to make sure that our experience with the media is more horrific than it already is? And the reason is that the more realistic they can make these pictures, the more 3D, etc., the more hypnotic they will become. And you folks are already hypnotized by TV and by your iPods, by you know, really high fidelity music that's stereophonic. You'll sit and listen to music all day long if you can, many of you. Others of you will listen to talk radio. Others of you will spend your time on the computer or watching television. But man, when all of these things, including your newspaper, become three-dimensional, you're going to spend even more time. And they'll suck even more money out of you into the pockets of their advertisers. You know, what gets me is that these Judeo-Bolsheviks who run the New York Times and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and all these other newspapers and these radio stations and TV stations, that they always claim that they're going to protect you from criminal capitalists who want to screw you out of your money. And then when you look at their pages and their advertising, they're always advertising stuff like Sprint, which will do anything to get, you know, to charge you a lot of money for their cell phones. And if you're late with your payment, they'll overcharge you. Or if you overdo your number of minutes, will overcharge you for each additional minute and to screw you over as much as they can. Same with the MasterCard and Visa companies. You know, for years they've been waiting for you to just either miss a payment or to overcharge your credit card, at which point they charge you $35. Now, next year, which is only a few days from now, they won't be able to do that. But they're writing to you, telling you that if you'd like to have the old system remain, that you can sign a waiver and they'll continue to charge you if you make a mistake. And how many of you were stupid enough to sign that? And if you signed it, I suggest that you call them up and say, I want to unsign that. I don't want to be charged if I make a mistake. If I make a mistake, just don't pay the damn thing. But I don't want to pay you $34 or $35 because I made a mistake. No one in their right mind would want to do that. It's ridiculous. I mean, can we talk? I was reading this really crazy story about a spy that was found dead in a sports bag. And he had been given a new identity by his MI6 bosses in the months leading up to his mysterious death. They got a picture of him here. He looks gay as a snake. His name is Gareth Williams, a GCHQ codebreaker on second mont to MI6. He had two passports and told his best friend that he was preparing for an undercover operation. Details of the 31-year-old's role within the Secret Services are disclosed today in an interview with his confidant and childhood sweetheart, Siad Lloyd James. In an interview with the Mail on Sunday, she said, I find it difficult to see anything in his personal life which could lie behind this. She reveals that he was training to take on a new identity 8 months before he was found dead. She testified that he often purchased designer women's clothes, but she insists they were gifts for her and for his sister. and not for him to wear, I guess. And she reveals the maths genius was found dead 2 days before he was due to visit Paris with his sister. The revelations shed new light on Mr. Williams' work, which until now had been regarded as highly technical and carrying little risk. But his body was found inside a zipped and padlocked North Face holdall in the bathroom of his MI6 flat on August the 23rd. A postmortem was inconclusive. Last week, police released e-fits of a couple they wished to question and provided intimate details about Mr. Williams' life, including his interest in bondage websites and his extraordinary collection of women designer clothes and shoes, worth about £15,000. Where is this story going? This is so crazy. But Mrs. Lloyd-Jones, 33, claims Mr. Williams would have confided in her and his sister, Sin, if he had any homosexual urges. Miss Lloyd-Jones, a fashion stylist, said, "I'm not in denial, nor is his mum, dad, or sister. It would have been fine if he was gay." "I've seen every item of clothing that was there. I truly believe that Sin and I were going to receive the clothing. He was so generous you wouldn't believe." Ah, this story is just too much. I'll tell you what, the news is so hilarious. It's so hilarious. But what's really interesting is that here he is working for MI6, and he's got this fetish for women's designer clothing, and the girl that he's seeing is a designer, a clothing designer, and she probably works around homosexuals all the time. It's probably impossible for her to tell the difference because she meets so many of them. That's just my guess. But for someone to be, you know, in so much denial and to say, "Well, yeah, he collects women's clothes, but I'm convinced he was going to give them to me and to my sister." £15,000 in clothes. That's $30,000 in American money. At any rate, Brock's having trouble, so guess what he's doing? Brock's been visiting with Marines in Haiti. Hawaii. President Barack Obama shook hands with Marines in Hawaii, took pictures, and heard Christmas tales from eager children during a visit to Marine Corps bases in Hawaii. Obama, who is on a family vacation in Kailua Bay, Hawaii, made an unannounced visit to the base Saturday afternoon. The visit was hardly a surprise. He stopped by the base during his Christmas vacations in 2008 and 2009. The first family is renting a vacation home in Hawaii, the president's home state. Oh, gee, and I thought Kenya was the president's home state. Oh, but I'm not supposed to mention that, am I? I'm sorry, I forgot. Please don't kill me. At the base, Obama and the First Lady posed for group photos and shook hands with diners. "Merry Christmas, Mr. President," one little boy said to Obama, who was accompanied by Michelle Obama. "No, she's Mrs. President," he told the youngster. "Yeah, baby. Well, you know how it goes." Hundreds of Marines and their families were having Christmas dinner in the hall, decked out in Christmas decorations. A typical Christmas dinner at the hall serves about 300 people. So there you have it. Your president was at a Marine ball where they had plenty of food, and it was just wonderful. Well, that's about it for the program today. I hope that you had a really nice Christmas. And Monday we'll have some more news stories for you.